problem with open-mindedness is regarding spiritual things is it inhibits any possibility for spiritual growth and spiritual progress. You can't get anywhere. The wise man comes to a fork in the road, and he uses his wisdom to discern which path is best, and then he takes it. The open-minded man just stops and stands there at the crossroads for the rest of his life, and he never progresses because he wants to keep his options open. No open-minded person ever makes any progress spiritually. Somebody asked me this week what I was going to be preaching on, and I think that they thought I was being smart with them when my answer came back, God. It's a sermon on God, specifically what do the Proverbs say about God. And usually I don't tell you my main point of my sermon right up front. I try and whet your appetite, build some interest, to create a little suspense maybe. But today I'm going to break that tradition. I'm going to tell you my final conclusion, the main point of the sermon right up front. The point of the sermon is, you should follow God's way. That's the sermon. So the topic is God. The message is, you should follow His way instead of the way of unrighteousness. Not sure that it would be possible to preach a sermon on a more basic topic than that. But the more I studied this week, the more fascinating treasures of truth came out of the book of Proverbs along this line. And you'll see what I mean in a minute. God's Word is such a rich mine of truth. It's basic, but it's anything but simple or elementary. The idea of following God's way is a deep, rich, complex study. When we began the study on the major themes of Proverbs, we started out with the most prolific topic of all in Proverbs, and that is righteousness. The starting point of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. And so this morning we're going to wrap the study up, and so it's fitting that we should revisit the most important theme in Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord is a phrase that appears over and over in Proverbs, 22 times in Proverbs, so it's very important we understand what that phrase means. What does it mean to fear God? Some people say, well, it just means respect. The problem with that is, if they wanted to say respect, they could have used the word respect instead of fear. There's got to be a reason why the word fear is used. Are we to think that, though, that it's fear in the sense of the painful emotion that comes to you when you are facing impending doom, you're just about to be injured or killed? Does fearing God mean having a sense of that kind of doom? It's not really the picture that we get in Proverbs as we read through all these phrases. I looked up all these ones and studied them. The Hebrew concept of fear sometimes has the connotation of terror and that emotion, but generally speaking, the Hebrew idea of fear is simply this, that of taking something seriously. To fear the Lord is to regard Him as supremely important. More important than anything else. And never take Him lightly in any way. In the account of Jonah, you remember the sailors went from fearing the storm to fearing the Lord as the story progressed. When the storm got so bad that it looked like they were going to sink, they began to take that storm very seriously. And then when they found out that God was more powerful than that storm, then they began to take Him very seriously. And that's what it means that they feared Him. And that kind of definition helps us understand passages like Leviticus 19 and verse 30 where people are commanded to fear the sanctuary in the tabernacle. Does that mean that they had this crippling emotion of anxiety that they were going to die, that the tent was going to fall on them or something? No, that's not what it means. It means they're to take it very seriously. They're never to treat it lightly in any way. They must never regard it as something common. So, what does it mean to take God seriously? Well, in the book of Proverbs, it means to follow His path whenever you make a decision. to seek out which way is his way. Discerning his way is the one and only criterion for making your decision. That's what it means to fear the Lord in Proverbs. That's why it appears to be synonymous so often with worshiping God, following God, obeying God, seeking God, walking with God, all of that. And Proverbs 8:13 says, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. So fearing the Lord is taking Yahweh God so seriously in your life that you would never dare knowingly depart from His path. So the beginning point of wisdom is very simple. Every time you come to a crossroads in life, and that's every time you make a decision, moment by moment, you ask one question and one question only, and that is, which way is the way of God? Which way would God want me to go? And that's the only thing that concerns you. The only question that matters, no other factor needs to be taken into consideration when you're making a decision. Now the world thinks that's the height of foolishness. The world will tell you, only consider one path? That is closed-minded. Walk through life with a predetermined mindset to just give consideration only to one single way? It's foolish. It's closed-minded. That's what the world says. Proverbs 9:10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The world says, no, open-mindedness is the beginning of wisdom. Proverbs 3:5 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. And the world says, no, lean on your own understanding with all your heart and trust the Lord only when it matches with your own understanding. The world's approach to living life and the approach presented in the book of Proverbs are just fundamentally opposed to each other and opposite. Our world exalts open-mindedness. Proverbs actually speaks extensively about open-mindedness. You may not know that, but there's the Hebrew word, pati, literally means to be open-minded. It comes from the root open, spacious, wide. And it means open-minded. If you look at that Hebrew word in the Hebrew lexicon, the first definition is open-minded. And it occurs 15 times in Proverbs. The NIV translates it simple, or simple-minded. But the picture painted of the open-minded person in Proverbs is not pretty. They lack understanding, they lack prudence, they lack knowledge, they lack discretion, they hate knowledge, they tend to be wayward, they tend to be complacent, they lack judgment. They can only learn through being flogged or punished. And 22 verse 3 says, a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the open-minded keep going and suffer for it. The term really is synonymous with the word fool in Proverbs. You say, well, why are they so bad? Well, because chapter 14, verse 15 says, an open-minded man believes anything. Open-minded man believes anything. It doesn't matter, they say, it doesn't matter what you believe. Anything's fine. Our world insists the key to wisdom is to remain open-minded, and if you're not open-minded, you won't consider... you'll consider every way. If you're open-minded, you'll consider every option. If you're not, then you're just going to pick one way, one narrow path, and then you're going to be narrow-minded in that way. And in our world's economy, nothing is more foolish than being narrow-minded. At least that's how they feel about matters of opinion. They don't really feel that way about matters that they regard as factual things. People love narrow-minded surgeons. Even the postmoderns love narrow-minded surgeons when they're having surgery, right? They love fundamentalist, narrow-minded pilots when they fly in a plane, who dogmatically hold to those old beliefs about thrust and lift and gravity and all that. The doctrines of aerodynamics, right? People understand that it's foolish to be open-minded when it comes to matters of fact in the real world. However, in matters of opinion, you should be open-minded. You should embrace, you know, any whatever people feel like. And basically, we agree with the world on that. You shouldn't be closed-minded and narrow when it comes to matters of opinion. If somebody enjoys something different than what you enjoy, they like blue, you like green, that's fine. You should be open-minded when it comes to matters of opinion. The only real question is, are spiritual truth claims in the realm of fact, true-false type stuff, or is it in the realm of opinion? Whether you prefer asparagus or ice cream or whatever. And since so many modern people, postmodern people, believe that religion is in the realm of opinion, then they think that open-mindedness is the way to go when it comes to religion. They say there's no right answer, so just value every answer when it comes to religion. But if they're wrong, if spiritual truth claims are in the realm of fact and not opinion, then nothing could be more foolish than to remain open-minded. And clearly they are wrong. Spiritual truth claims have to be in the realm of fact and not opinion because of the fact that they're truth claims. When those people say, look, there's only one, there's no one single religion that's true. When they say that, that statement itself is either true or false. When they say, it doesn't matter what you believe, it only matters that you believe. When they say that, that statement itself is either true or false. It's not a matter of opinion. See, the problem with open-mindedness is, regarding spiritual things, is it inhibits any possibility for spiritual growth and spiritual progress. You can't get anywhere. The wise man comes to a fork in the road, and he uses his wisdom to discern which path is best, and then he takes it. The open-minded man just stops and stands there at the crossroads for the rest of his life, and he never progresses because he wants to keep his options open. No open-minded person ever makes any progress spiritually. And most people realize that. They aren't really open-minded. They might claim to be, but they really aren't. They have a narrow path. They have a system for making decisions at each crossroads that they use. Nobody considers every possibility every single time that they come to a crossroads. That would be impossible. People navigate through life by seeking out a certain particular narrow path. Everybody does that. For some people, it's the path of pragmatism. You know, whatever, every time there's a decision, whatever, they're inclined to choose whichever way seems like it'll work out the best to them. For some people, it's the path of pleasure. Every time there's a fork in the road, they instead of considering every possibility, they just look for the path that will lead to the most pleasure, ultimately. For some people, it's the path of popular opinion, whichever road is most traveled. For others, they have a policy of whatever road is least traveled, or whatever it is. But everybody's got some system. A single path that they're on every time they make a decision. For the Christian, the path that we seek out is the fear of the Lord. Every intersection in life, we don't try to imagine all the possible outcomes of every possible way we could go. We just ask one question only, which path is the way of the Lord? Which way would the Lord want me to go? That's the Christian life. Leaving your mind open is foolishness. It's like leaving your door open. It's just an invitation to disaster. Your whole life should be a process of closing your mind, in the sense that you're narrowing the field of what is potentially true. Narrower and narrower until you get narrowed down to the actual truth, right? A three-year-old, you give the equation 10 minus 3 to a three-year-old. And he doesn't know what the answer is, and he doesn't even know how to draw any boundaries. It could be anything. Any number might be. You say, could it be 100? I don't know, I guess. 1,000, 1,000,000? He can't rule anything out. You ask a six-year-old what's 10 minus 3, and he may still not be able to know the answer, but he can probably narrow it. He can rule out 100. He knows it's going to be probably less than 10. So the more knowledge you gain, the more you can narrow down the potential correct answers until you finally get it down to the true answer. So all of life is a process of narrowing your mind with regard to factual information. The wise man looks at all the possible paths that he can take through life, narrows it down to the best one, and that is the way of the Lord. And once he does that, he follows that way no matter what. Even when God's way doesn't seem right, in fact, especially when God's way doesn't seem right, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, you all know it, but think about it for just a moment. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. Now, when should you not lean on your own understanding? What about if your understanding matches the way of the Lord? Then should you? Well, then it's fine, okay? If your understanding, if the way of the Lord is this way, and this way is the way that seems right to you anyway, then it's okay. This Proverbs 3, 5, only applies to situations where your understanding differs from God's way. It only applies to those times when God's way seems wrong. It just doesn't seem like the best way. That's when you need this proverb to come along and tell you, don't lean on your own understanding at this moment, follow God's way. Obviously, because if you think that God's way is the right way, then you'll follow that way anyway, even without this proverb. So, the number one exhortation we have in the book of Proverbs regarding God is this: follow His way. Always follow His way. Secondly, understand the nature of God. Understand what God is like. In order to operate wisely in any medium, you have to understand the properties of that medium. If you're in water, for example, then you need to, in order to make good decisions, you need to understand a few properties, things that are true about water, like you can't breathe when you're underwater, or things that aren't buoyant will sink in water, or cold water removes heat from your body faster than cold air does, or something like that. You need to know the information about it in order to make wise decisions about it. If you're up in the mountains, you should know a few things about the mountains. You should know where avalanches are likely to occur, or how cold it gets at night, or whatever. Wisdom is all about knowing the properties of this world where we live in so that we can make wise decisions. And the most fundamental aspect of learning the properties of the creation is understanding the properties of God, the way that God operates, because if God is running this place, then we're not going to be able to make wise decisions navigating through this place unless we know the nature of the one who's running the place. The kinds of decisions he tends to make and the reactions he tends to have. When Proverbs talks about God, we need to really listen and ask ourselves, what does the book of Proverbs say about the way God operates, about his nature? That's really the subject we've been studying this whole series. But this morning we're going to take a look specifically at what the passages actually say about truths about God. And this is going to come as no surprise. The number one beginning point is that he's the creator. That's always the beginning point about understanding the nature of God. He's the creator. He's the creator of all things. Proverbs 3:19, by wisdom Yahweh laid the earth's foundations. By understanding he set the heavens in place. So he made everything. And that's significant. In Proverbs 30, you have a section there in the first four verses that basically somebody says, the writer says, if I don't know the Creator, I know nothing. I'm ignorant. I don't know anything worthwhile. And understanding God as the Creator has tremendous implications on the way that you navigate through life, the way that you live, the way that you treat other people, for example. Proverbs 14:31, he who oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. If you understand that people are God's creation, then that's going to affect the way that you treat people. Proverbs 22:2, rich and poor have this in common. Yahweh is the maker of them all. So God is a creator. Secondly, he's in sovereign control of everything. Now turn to chapter 16 in Proverbs. Chapter 16 emphasizes heavily this idea of God's sovereign control. All of the wisdom of Proverbs is predicated on the fact that God controls all things. One thing all pagan religions at the time had in common is the fact that they believed that there was no such God, no such thing as a God who controlled everything. That's where the Bible radically differs from the ancient Near Eastern literature of the time. They believed in a lot of gods who had a lot of power, but only Israel believed in a God who had all power. And his control over all things, combined with the nature of his character, is the form, the basis of which all wise actions spring. And which actions are wise and which ones are foolish. Proverbs 16:4. Look at verse 4. Yahweh works out everything for his own ends. Everything. Even the wicked for a day of disaster. Now the word translated works out there is just a normal word to do something. The Lord does everything. Literally it says Yahweh does everything for his own purposes. He does everything. Everything that happens, God does it. It doesn't say God allows everything. It says he does everything. Everything that happens, God did it. There's a sense in which God has done it. Some things about God, there's something God does directly, some things he does indirectly through other agents. The verse doesn't say anything about secondary or primary causes. That's not the point. The point is simply to point out that every time anything happens, it happens because God's purposes bring it about. And this is the key to understanding the exceptions to the laws that we observe. You know, we've talked about that before. Generally speaking, the wicked suffer and the righteous are rewarded and prosper. Except, there are exceptions to that, right? That always happens except when God has some other purpose. Generally speaking, hard work leads to wealth. Except when God has another purpose. Generally speaking, a soft answer will turn away wrath. Except in cases where God has another purpose. That has massive implications on how you look at the world and how you think. Some Christians are really borderline deists. They think that God created the world, sort of wound it up, gave it a spin, and then sat back and watched. And he doesn't really ever, you know, once in a while a miracle here and there. Other than that, he doesn't intervene. And so the laws of wisdom just sort of happen by themselves, and sometimes due to bad luck, they don't really work out, something goes awry. That is a mile off target of what the biblical worldview is of the way that God runs things. God controls everything. And when something unexpected happens, it happens because of God's purposes. Same thing goes for when expected things happen. You know, we shouldn't fall into the error of separating physics and the purposes of God. If you get into an accident that changes your life, you might ask, well, you know, why did this happen to me? Why did this happen? And some smart aleck physicist might say, well, that's easy. It happened because there wasn't sufficient friction between your tires and the ice and the velocity of your car and the mass and all that, and couldn't stop it. And no one denies all that, that's why the accident happened. But to say that's the only reason, that's the only purpose, is to fail to see the big picture, the whole picture. God could have seen to it that there was a patch of dirt there and you didn't slide. He could have seen to it that the place warmed up and the ice wouldn't be there. He could have worked in your own heart to slow down, maybe. He could have done all that. He didn't. He let it all happen. He orchestrated all the events in such a way that the outcome would happen that way, and he did that for a purpose, for his own purpose. There are people that can handle that. I've talked to Christians who can handle that with big things. You know, I lose a loved one, I get an injury or something like that. I can handle, okay, that has a purpose, but they can't seem to, for whatever reason, handle that with the small, mundane things of life. They can't believe that God's in charge of the small events. They go to throw something in the garbage and miss, and it tumbles onto the floor. They don't think that God had anything to do with that. They'll just say, it's just because of the laws of physics and the fact that I'm a bad shot, and there's no purpose of God behind it. And I've always asked people like that, at what point does God start caring? How important does something have to be before God starts caring about your life? The Bible says He controls everything. I've even heard some Christians say, they'll be talking about something, they'll say, God had nothing to do with that. That is a non-Christian worldview. I don't care what they're talking about. It doesn't matter what they're talking about. There is nothing that God has nothing to do with. There's no event that takes place that God has nothing to do with. Proverbs 16:33. Look at verse 33. The lot is cast into the lap, but every decision comes from Yahweh. What could be more mundane than rolling the dice? And yet every time any die is ever rolled anywhere in the world, God is up in heaven making a decision as to how that die is going to come up. What number? All for His own purposes. He controls everything. All the way down to the lot being cast. Everything. You say, okay, well, how does human will fit into that? That's always a big question that comes up. Does Proverbs paint a picture of human beings as robots who can't make real decisions? They're just puppets manipulated by God's control? Are there Proverbs that speak about the relationship between human will and divine control all in the same proverb? Yes. Yes, there are. Let's take a look at verse 9. It says, in his heart, a man plans his course, but Yahweh determines his steps. There is such a thing as free will in the sense that it really is the man planning his course. He's actually the one making the plans. He's not being forced against his will to go down that course. He's planning his own course by means of his own will. That's a real decision of his will. The man's not free in every sense, but his will is free enough to make decisions that are truly his decisions. No matter how determined your will is, though, it's God who determines where your steps actually go. I might decide to go to King Soopers, and if God has made the decision that He wants me to end up at Albertsons instead, I will end up at Albertsons. But I'll do it by means of all my own free will decisions. God controls the traffic, the stoplights, you know, all the advertisements I'll see on the way, the cravings I might get for those French crullers they have at Albertsons and not at King Soopers. Whatever. I control my decision making, but God controls ultimately everything that happens, and He'll get me where He wants to get me. In fact, verse 1 takes it even farther. Look back up at verse 1. Listen to this. To man belong the plans of the heart, but from Yahweh comes the reply of the tongue. Plans of your heart really do belong to you. They're really your plans. You make them go one way or the other by your own will, but God has given man that freedom. However, ultimately, it's God who determines what happens, even so much as the words that come out of your mouth, determined by God.